Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Ed Chu and Ken Miller. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center, and he's an internationally recognized expert on colorectal cancer. Dr. Miller is the Director of the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Program, and he's also the author of Choices in Breast Cancer Treatment. If you'd like to join the discussion, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Ken Miller welcomes Paul Ridley. Paul's a cancer advocate and fundraiser, and he's also the founder of Row for Hope.
Before we talk about what your project is, which is pretty amazing, what got you interested in supporting cancer research?
Yeah, well, you know, my family history is like a lot of people, one where I didn't really have a choice in a lot of ways. And when I was 17 years old and a senior in high school, my mom was diagnosed with malignant melanoma, and she passed away in early 2001. Later that year, my dad was diagnosed with prostate cancer, was successfully treated, and is now perfectly healthy. So what that really gave me and my family is two really very different outcomes of what can happen when you're treated, when you're diagnosed with cancer. That really made me think that, you know, I should be doing something in my life to help families like mine get more of my dad's positive outcomes and fewer of my mom's outcomes.
Yeah, which you know, I have to say, and I think you're right. So many of us have had an experience when we're kids. How's that? It sounds like it has sent you on a mission. Let me ask you something else too. Maybe a more personal question, but just aside from Row for Hope, how has it also just affected you as a person? All those experiences.
Yeah, well, you know, for one thing, the skin cancer, you know, unlike some cancers, is one that I feel like I can prevent. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that I have the, enviable position of being very conscious of being out in the sun and what my sun exposure is. And, you know, what that means is, well, it takes a lot of different forms. One of them is that, you know, I do mountain lake vacations, not beach vacations, mm-hmm. You know, things like that. You know, so my mom's experience and sort of the experiences in my family has really, really affected my everyday life.
Yeah, and it sounds like you also spread the word about that too.
Right, absolutely.
What you're doing here. So what is Row for Hope?
Sure. Row for Hope is a 501c3, a nonprofit organization that I founded along with my sister Joy to raise money for cancer research. And there are a lot of organizations like that. This one is a little bit unique in that it revolves around my upcoming transatlantic solo and unsupported rowing expedition.
Yeah, so I've seen a picture of you in the boat. Yeah, you're going to row from where to where, and tell us about this boat that you're using.
Right. Yeah, I'm rowing from east to west from the Canary Islands, right off of Morocco, in northwestern Africa, about 3,000 miles, 2,950 to be exact, across the Atlantic Ocean to Antigua in the Caribbean.
Absolutely, which sounds absolutely amazing. How did you pick that route?
Yeah, that's actually a relatively common ocean crossing route. That's the same route that Christopher Columbus took, I think, on his third voyage, and happens to be one where at that time of year the trade winds are at least as much in my favor as they can be. So you know, they may not be helping me along the whole way, but the idea is they at least won't be blowing me backwards on
good,
that route.
Good. How do you train for something like that?
Well, you know, lots of rowing, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Sure.
I'm almost 3 years into a very ocean rowing specific training program. So, you know, that means an awful lot of time on the rowing machine, a lot of time by myself on the water in a boat. But the rowing is also supplemented with some other things to sort of mix it up, which includes yoga, some weightlifting, and some cross training.
Absolutely, it sounds very exciting. Did you do crew in college or?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. I was a big rower. To row across the ocean, you absolutely have to, you know, love every stroke. Right. So that's kind of a prerequisite, I think.
Wow. Is rowing? How old are you? Do I may ask?
Yeah, I'm 25.
All right. So has rowing for you? You've been doing it for a while. Does it keep getting better, or do you ever get tired of it?
You know, I guess the fact that I haven't really thought about getting tired of it means that the answer is no.
Okay.
You know, there happens to be something about rowing, I think, that is therapeutic, absolutely. And, you know, I think a lot of rowers will tell you that you know, when you're on the water, you know, that's when you do your best thinking.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not just about rowing. It's about everything else, too.
Terrific. What's your personal goal during the journey, and what's your fundraising goal?
Mm-hmm. Well, the really first goal that I'm focused on with this expedition is to have a safe crossing. You know, as one can imagine, you know, there are you know, some risks involved with any ocean crossing, like a lot of things. So number one goal is to have a safe crossing. After that, you know, I'm not focused, unlike some other expeditions, I'm not focused on setting a record or getting anywhere close to, you know, the fastest crossing on this route or anything like that, even though, given the way that the expedition is set up and my age and the boat that I'm using, you know, I have every reason to believe that I could be fast and could set a record. But what we're really focused on is the cancer research fundraising aspect. And, you know, our goal there is probably equally aggressive as rowing across the Atlantic is, and we'd like to raise more than $500,000 for cancer research at Yale Cancer Center.
Well, I'll say we here at Yale would love for you to do that too, because I'll tell you, it is all going for a really good cause. How did you know? When did you decide to create Row for Hope and to start mm-hmm. this project?
Yeah, well, I first found out about ocean rowing, you know, a little over 3 years ago, and I didn't, even though I've been a rower, I didn't immediately make the connection and realize that this would be how I would sort of do my part in support of cancer research. But when I got talking to some of the other people that have rowed oceans, and believe it or not, there's a small community that has done that, mostly based in Britain. But what I learned was that people have really been able to raise impressive amounts of money for causes that they really care about through ocean rowing. And I knew I had the rowing background, and I knew that, you know, the idea of rowing for 60 to 80 days across the Atlantic didn't scare me. So, you know, I eventually made the connection that said, you know what, I think this can be it. So what came from that was, of course, the legal structure and founding a Connecticut nonprofit corporation called Row for Hope. So that's sort of where this all came from. And, you know, none of it would have been possible, of course, without the help of my sister, Joy, who's also a rower.
Which is terrific. Were the logistics of this, the setting up the corporation, the, you know, were those difficult?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
You know, one of the real benefits of a project like this is that I get to learn an awful lot about a lot of things that I really didn't expect. You know, when I first started this whole project, I thought I was signing up for a long rowing trip. And I've been at it 3 years, and I haven't taken a single stroke across the Atlantic yet. You know, so the logistics of it are huge. You know, I've enjoyed it. You have to decide that you're going to enjoy every minute of it. You know, so I've learned a lot. You know, but I think it's all moving us in the right direction.
Now, again, I have to tell you, I think at the Cancer Center, I mean, a lot of us are, all of us are very excited about your project. Where do you see the funds going once they reach the Cancer Center? What kind of programs would you like to see supported?
Yeah, after, you know, learning a lot about Yale Cancer Center and speaking with an awful lot of people here, we ended up partnering, it seems, closely with Mario Schnoll, who is taking part in and leading some really impressive research, specifically in the area of melanoma, which, of course, is important to me because I lost my mom to melanoma.
Yeah, but. Yeah. And, you know, there's, I think you're absolutely right, there's some wonderful projects going on that are really hopefully going to create, I mean, they are already creating new hope, but they're really going to hopefully find some cures for that disease. How can supporters help you raise money for this project?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the best way to do it and the easiest way to do it is to lead people and friends and family and coworkers to the Expedition's website, which is rowforhope.com. On the website, when I'm out on the Atlantic, which is starting in early December, I'll be writing daily updates to my blog, and people will be able to track the progress of me in my boat on a map of the world, and you can see how much rowing I'm doing every day and you know, really get in touch with me and the project that way.
All right, just be a little picky. Is it Row for Hope without any dashes in between?
Or? It's all one word and all spelled out.
All right, terrific. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute and then come back and join us with Paul Ridley, who is going to be rowing across the Atlantic, which is really exciting. And we'll be back in just a minute.
The American Cancer Society estimates that in 2008, there'll be over 62,000 new cases of melanoma in this country, and about 2,400 patients are diagnosed annually here in Connecticut alone. While melanoma accounts for only about 4% of skin cancer cases, it causes the most skin cancer deaths. But when detected early, melanoma is easily treated and highly curable. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for melanoma. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to newly available medicines which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, and you'll find more information at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm joined today by Paul Ridley from an organization called Row for Hope. So, Paul, how many miles is it from east to west?
Yes, east to west in a straight line. It's 2,950 miles. My actual course will take me quite a bit, probably 300 to 400 miles southwest into what's really a band of trade winds in the Atlantic. And at that point, when I really get in the sweet spot there, I'll head due west. So I expect that my actual course will be more like 3,300 to maybe 3,400 miles.
Right, absolutely. I feel better. I want to tell you why. Because when you say 2,950, I was going to say to you, geez, how about the other 50 miles? But it sounds like you've got that covered.
Right.
So So let's get to the stuff that I think people really want to know about. Tell us about this boat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the boat is one that's very different, probably from what most people have in mind when you talk about, you know, a rowboat. You know, this boat is custom designed, custom built to my specifications. So that includes my height and my weight, and it really fits me, and fits this expedition. So what that means is that it's 19 feet 4 inches long, 5 feet 4 inches wide at the widest point, and is really designed for the open ocean. So, you know, that means it's able to withstand, 30 plus foot seas and able to protect me even in the worst of storms.
How do you do that in terms of, because honestly, I'm trying to picture small boats and, you know, with very tough seas. How did you design a boat with that in mind?
Right. Yeah. One of the most important characteristics of this boat that is extremely important in the open ocean is that there are enclosed cabins forward and aft. The aft cabin is the living space, and that's where I'll be spending all of my time when I'm not rowing. So that's where I'm sleeping, eating, navigating. Everything happens in this aft cabin, which is airtight and watertight. So that's where a lot of the safety comes in, and the cabins forward and aft make the boat such that it will roll if it needs to. So the fear of capsize is negated somewhat by the fact that the boat will pop back up. If a wave were to come that would capsize it.
Yeah. And in terms of Weight. How much does this boat weigh?
Yeah, it's 450 pounds bare, fully loaded for the expedition. I expect it to come in around 1,200 or 1,300 pounds. For a little perspective, I've spent most of my time rowing in flatwater racing shells, which a single skull weighs about 32 pounds.
Wow, so it's a huge difference.
Yeah.
So you're going to have, I'm just doing a little math here, about 800 pounds of gear.
Mm-hmm.
What does that consist of?
Yeah, mostly food, and I have very, very much of an incentive to eat as much as I can in the first few days,
right?
So I don't have to row it all across the ocean. So lots of food, lots of safety equipment, lots of technology on the boat that will help me stay in touch with my land-based support team, also help me give updates to everyone that's able to follow me through rowforhope.com and write updates to the blog and send pictures back and even make phone calls back to do radio and TV and newspaper interviews and that sort of thing.
All right, so I'll ask in advance, will we be able to do an interview from the boat?
Of course.
Oh, that would be that'd be awesome to have you out there and sort of sharing the story. What kind of food are you going to have, and how many calories do you think you'll be eating a day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of the food is dehydrated food, mm-hmm. Which is the same type of thing that you would have if you were going on a long camping trip. So what that means is that you add 2 cups of water and wait for 10 minutes, and what you end up with is different tasting bag of mush depending on what's being served that day. You don't do it for the food.
Right, right.
Unfortunately, I'm expecting to eat 8,000 to 10,000 calories a day of this food. I wish I could bring a pizza every day and eat that instead. But, instead it has to come from mostly dehydrated food, which actually has, some fairly good nutrition It will give me all of the vitamins and calories that I need to support 10 to 12 hours of rowing a day.
Yeah. How many calories do you think you'll burn?
Probably more than I'll be able to consume. Really getting 8,000 calories in your body in any given day is a challenge, given kind of what's available to me. Most people, and based on the research I've done and speaking with people that have done this before, most people tend to lose 20 to 30 pounds. So right now, I'm very much in the process of trying to put on some weight before I leave, so I have a little bit of money in the bank.
Sure. How did you calculate the amount of water that you'll need, and how many pounds is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm expecting a liter an hour when I'm rowing, so that's 10 to 12 liters a day, plus about 5 liters every night for recovery. That gets me just under 6 gallons. Fortunately, in my case, and for this boat, I don't have to carry all my own water. I have the luxury of a water desalinator that is electric and powered through the boat's solar electrical system. And this electric desalinator will produce 6.3 gallons an hour, which is an awful lot of water.
Oh, I see. All right. So thankfully, you really don't have to carry that weight in terms of water.
Right. I do have some backup freshwater reserves, but for the most part, I'm making my own freshwater every day.
In terms of height of technology, you've already sort of given us a little bit idea, but yeah, share with us what's on the boat.
Yeah, this boat is really loaded with technology, mm-hmm. Technology in recent years has made a crossing like this much more comfortable. I really have a lot of luxuries when it comes to technology. This boat, for example, in addition to the satellite phone that we mentioned, has VHF radios, has a handful of backup GPS systems. I'm also able to navigate by the stars, mm-hmm. Celestially with a sextant. Even though it's sort of a novelty to be able to do that, hopefully I don't have to use it. So lots of GPS navigation equipment, lots of safety equipment. And, all sorts of technology. This boat is really bristling with antennas and solar panels and everything.
Uh-huh. But, uh-huh. Now, if people want to see the boat, should they also go to the website?
Right, absolutely. There are lots more pictures of me rowing the boat and a lot more information on Row for Hope and the cause and even the logistics of the expedition on the website.
So what will a typical day be like while you're out at sea?
Yeah. You know, every day is really structured around getting 10 to 12 hours behind the oars. And that will come in two-hour shifts. Each shift will be buffered by eating, as you can imagine. So I'll wake up probably about 5 a.m., have a little snack, get in 2 hours before breakfast, eat breakfast, another 2 hours mid-morning, another 2 hours before lunch. At that point, around noon and towards the heat of the day, I'll be taking some time off and sleeping in the cabin and staying out of the sun for a few hours until mid-afternoon when I'm back on the oars. And at that point, I should get in, you know, hopefully three more two-hour rowing shifts before it's time to go to bed for the night.
How many miles a day?
I think probably 50 to 60 miles a day would be ideal. That will probably be a little bit, you know, not exactly consistent when there are storms, which of course there are going to be. It may be negative mileage or no mileage at all. Yeah. And when things are really going well, you know, some ocean rowboats have made as much as, 80, 90 miles a day.
Now, you know, I'm picturing, rowing in college, and oftentimes that's a team sport. Mm-hmm. And I can actually sort of picture you as someone who's actively involved in a team. And this is a solo activity. This is, several months out at sea by yourself. Is that going to be, do you picture it being lonely? How do you look at that part of things?
You know, you're absolutely right about, rowing is thought of in a lot of ways as the ultimate team sport, whereas this is a very individual expedition. And what I've found is that not only am I going to be very much alone for the 3 months when I'm out there, but my training for the last 3 years has all been alone as well. So one of the things I'm really looking forward to is getting back in an 8-man boat, when I get back home. But as far as the solitude when I'm out there, I absolutely will be the only person there. And in a lot of ways, that could be lonely. At the same time, putting this in perspective, it's something that I'll do once. I know that I'll have a lot of people following me back home. I'm able to receive messages from them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, some of the best motivation for when rowers are out there is getting messages from home, from friends, family, and even from strangers.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, hopefully we'll I would like our listeners to keep in touch with you. And I think we now have a way to do it, and we'll go back over that again. I guess being old enough to be your father, and I'm sure your own dad has thought about safety issues. What backup do you have just in case there's a problem?
Right. Yeah, and the safety of this project is really number one, a lot of the safety equipment that I have is technology based, and I am carrying a life raft, for example. Hopefully, I never have to use it. The builder of my boat was really surprised when I told him I was going to do that, because he said, this boat is the best life raft you can ever possibly have. I am taking precautions like that. Also, technology wise, I have an emergency beacon, what's called an EPIRB, which through a series of satellites if I were to blow out my back or if something were to go wrong, I'm able to flick the switch, and that will send an emergency signal back to the International Monitoring Station outside of Washington, D.C., which would then organize a response.
All right. Well, obviously, I hope you never have to use it, but right. but you've certainly planned for it. Your training schedule now is what?
It's actually pretty light right now. I've been training hard for 2.5 years or so. But right now I'm more on an eating schedule than a training schedule, which is nice in a lot of ways. So I'm really just in maintenance mode and trying to stay healthy and stay motivated and get everything that needs to be done before I leave done, so that I can arrive at the starting line in the best possible position and best possible health.
How will you get there, and how will the boat get there?
Yeah, the boat is being shipped over in a 20-foot ocean freight container, and the boat's leaving about a month before I do, so that it can clear customs and make it past go through all the different scrutineering that it needs to go through to get clearance to leave, which of course the authorities in the Canary Islands are very interested in, and they'll really be ensuring the safety of me and the boat even before I get there, and I will leave about a week before it's time to go, and then I'll be on standby for 9 or 10 days, waiting for the weather to turn around my way, and then I'm off.
Now, I actually hadn't pictured that aspect of the authorities in the Canary Islands really, in a sense, are there for you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a long checklist of equipment and different preparations and certifications that I need to have to do a trip like this. Even though it's pretty rare here in the States, I'll be the third American to row across an ocean solo. But there have been several dozen more British people and a handful of people from other countries that have done this. So the authorities in the Canaries know what to expect and are very much interested in helping us do this in the safest way possible.
How many people have rowed this route?
Yeah, last count, I think there were 34 that had done this solo on this route, and most of them happen to be British, I'll be the first American to do it in I think about 8 or 10 years.
And are there other routes that are popular for this unusual sport?
Not really. You hear a little bit about solo rowers crossing the North Atlantic, which in this part of the country probably will get more press because they typically leave from New York City or from Cape Cod, and will row over to Ireland or to Britain, and that's really the only other solo crossing route.
And why did you choose this one versus that one? I'm just wondering.
Yeah, well, the sort of mid-Atlantic route that I'm taking is the easy one.
Okay.
But, it's...
Easy is relative.
Of course. It's... The route I'm taking is a warmer southerly route where you don't have to worry about hurricanes, to be completely honest. In the North Atlantic, you have a cold, foggy, adventure.
Right.
Whereas down south, you're at Caribbean latitude, so, I get to row in the sun.
You are a smart guy. So, I want to ask you a little bit about yourself. What are your, you've got this incredible trip coming up, and which is an amazing fundraiser for a great cause. What do you want to do afterwards?
That's a great question. Hopefully I don't lose my love of rowing. Mm-hmm. Afterwards I'll probably spend some time on the couch, which is something I haven't been able to do recently. But I'm not really sure what comes next. Certainly I don't think this will be the end of Row for Hope.
Right.
I'll probably be out on the road showing off the boat,
doing
more publicity and fundraising, and hopefully finding the next person that wants to row across the Atlantic in support of cancer
and
research.
And in terms of your own career goals, what are they?
Yeah, well, I'm 25. I'll probably go back to school at some point, potentially to study nonprofit management, something like that. But we'll see. I've learned so much and been exposed to so many different things through this project that I think that it'll be very much be time for some reflection.
So actually, along those lines, I'm gonna ask you a personal question again, and I hope it's an okay one. If your mom was here, what would she be saying about this project?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to think that she'd be completely supportive and be pushing me, off into the ocean. And in some ways, that's probably true. But at the same time, she would still very much be my mother. And would be very worried, as I'm sure you would expect. Would be hoping that I call her every day.
Well said. I have to say, this has been a wonderful session, Paul. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, this is Dr. Ken Miller from Yale Cancer Center Answers. We want to wish Paul Ridley a wonderful journey as he's doing terrific fundraising for the Yale Cancer Center. Until next week, this is Dr. Ken Miller from the Yale Cancer Center wishing you a safe and healthy week.
If you have any questions for the doctors or would like to share your comments, just go to yalecancercenter.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. Next week, we'll hear from Drs. Frank Detterbeck and Lynn Tanui, who join us in the observation of Lung Cancer Awareness Month. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.